You might remember history class for the presidents, wars, and treaties you had to memorize, but a local group called the Mischievous Jonglers, did I say that right?
That is correct.
Okay, thank goodness, takes a different approach through a series called Stand Up History. Joining me now to regale us with some of Cincinnati's historical curiosities are Stand Up History co-founder and Cincinnati Curiosities blogger, Greg Hand, Stand Up History co-founder and mixologist, Molly Wellman, and astronomer and host of the Looking Up podcast, Dean Regas. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thanks for having
us.
Yes, we're excited. So, Greg, you claim to be an authority on the history of prostitution in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and the city had a red light district, huh?
That's correct. In fact, my wife hates when I say this, but I got into this because of my wife. She was doing a genealogy, and she pulled up a census page, and she said, oh, my God, look at this. And there on the census, it had madam, prostitute. And I thought, I wonder how many prostitutes showed up in the census. I now have a spreadsheet of more than 850 prostitutes in Cincinnati, where they practiced.
These are not current.
How they died.
Okay.
1820 to about 1920.
Okay. I feel like it's important to clarify that for our listeners who are just joining the conversation.
And for a long time, they were in a red light district in the West End that was shut down because of World War I.
And there were brothels. I mean, they were mostly working in brothels.
The fascinating part of this is that it was an industry run by women. Very powerful women who influenced politics in this city at a time when there were so few opportunities for women.
Huh. Okay. And that doesn't necessarily mean they were great places to work, just a different ownership structure, I guess.
They were combinations of working places, social centers, lending banks, very complicated institutions. It's a fascinating topic.
When did they close and how did that change the business of prostitution in Cincinnati?
Most large cities at the time had what they called a segregated district, or an area where they confined the social vice. And in World War I, the federal government came up with an edict that any segregated district within 5 miles of an army training camp had to be shut down. And the West End was within 5 miles of Fort Thomas, Kentucky. And that basically ended decades of practice. Mm.
And then I'm going to cheat because I read an article, a lovely article you wrote for Cincinnati Magazine about this. I believe then the prostitution didn't end in Cincinnati. It just moved to other places. Where did prostitution go after that?
Oh, it's tragic what happened after that, because we went from this large women-run industry to the birth of the pimp. And so the young women who had been housed in a house were now put on the street. They needed protection, and their protectors became these predatory pimps.
Hmm. Well, Molly, some of this business shifted to bars from brothels. Did Cincinnati have saloons everywhere? I mean, in the neighborhood where I live in Covington, there's a building that was a saloon / grocery store for a while, and then boarding house on top. Was that pretty standard historically?
Yes. There were saloons everywhere. Yes.
Yeah.
Except for there were certain neighborhoods that were built that specifically were bed saloons, like Hyde Park. Hyde Park was like, no saloons.
Huh. Why?
I know. No fun. They wanted it to be pure, you know? Like saloons back in the 1800s, some of them, not all of them, but some of them were, you know, rowdy.
Yeah. What about the speakeasy scene? Was that pretty big?
That was really big. But a lot of speakeasies you'd find in like private residences as well. People drank.
Yeah.
People drank a lot during Prohibition as well. But before Prohibition, Cincinnati at one point in the 1880s had close to 2,000 saloon, like drinking establishments within the basin of the city.
And that's not even crossing the river into northern Kentucky.
No, not even going up the hills or anything. That is just in the basin from the West End to the East End. And everything in between. It was must have been a lot of fun, you know?
Everybody was stumbling distance to someplace. Yes.
Like, if you think about it, on Vine Street between 12th and 13th Street, 23 saloons just in that one block.
In one block?
In one block, 23 saloons.
Was there room for anything else?
No. Yes, there was. But yeah, but, I mean, it was that block must have been incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about historical curiosities in Cincinnati and beyond the stars. We will get to Dean and that part of things. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Molly, you've been talking about how fun all these saloons must have been. When you think about Cincinnati's spirits history,
yes,
do you have a historical Cincinnati cocktail that comes to mind?
Yeah, there were a few. There weren't a ton, but we did have one cocktail book that was written, in the 18. It was about the 1880s, 1890s, and it was written by a gentleman named Christopher L. Lawler. He was the head bartender at the Burnett House and also the Grand Hotel. And then he bopped around here and there. And he put out a publication also for like wine and spirits as well. But he wrote a book called The Mixicologist. And it was amazing. So there were some cocktails in there that were specifically created by him. But there was one in particular that I love to serve. It's called the Commodore. And it was created in about 1903 by a gentleman named Philip Gross, who was a head bartender at Focar's and at the Stag and another place called, it was called the Commodore, but the drink is not named for it. It was the Commodore Dance Hall. However, he created this at Focar's, and it was after the whole Spanish-American War, and he created this in honor of Commodore Admiral George Dewey, who was a hero of the Spanish-American War. And so it's a really fantastic cocktail. It's with whiskey, fresh lime juice, simple syrup, and then it's topped off with a dark Jamaican rum. And he won an award for it, a national award for it, which he won this, medal that was like layers, you know, and he would wear it proudly everywhere, you know. But he did a lot of things. Even after Prohibition, he would teach mixology classes at the St. Nicholas Hotel, which was on Whit Race and 4th Street. He ended up also owning another bar on McMicken Street before he passed away. Oh. So, but there were quite a few, just not a lot, but quite a few little cocktails here.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's my favorite one.
Well, Dean, let's get off the streets and into the skies. Cincinnati's the birthplace of modern astronomy, right? How big a deal is the city when it comes to modern stargazing?
Well, it was definitely the place where it got started, in the United States at least. And that's where I ran into these two characters doing a stand-up history thing at the Cincinnati Observatory. And I was their moderator, which, good Lord, that was fun, trying to keep them in line. The topic was baseball, I think, correct? I think that was the
it
one
was
on
part
baseball.
Of it, yeah.
And so at the end of that talk, I was like, hey, can I join your group? Like, I don't know any Cincinnati history. I have a history degree. Though, which probably doesn't help at all.
We figure the space-time continuum includes astronomy.
That's right. That's
definitely.
Right. So from all my time at the Cincinnati Observatory, that is just the place has the oldest telescope in the United States. We had the first basically popularizer of astronomy in the United States, the Neil deGrasse Tyson of the 1800s named Ormsby McKnight Mitchell.
Yes.
So these fine, mischievous jonglers from stand-up history let me talk about space history also. Every once in a while, I throw in some Cincinnati things. Like, we had a Cincinnati astrologer who had a very, terrible end.
Colorful life,
but terrible ending, which makes me good because that's what astrologers deserve. But then we have tons of astronomy history. Like, I talk about the mounds of Ohio. We have a lot of great Native American mounds that have astronomical significance. I talk a little bit about Neil Armstrong and his time in Cincinnati. And then we're presenting tomorrow at the Museum Center for a stand-up history event. And it's going to be a fun time. We're going to have a lot of Cincinnati history, and then I'll throw in some space history too.
Yeah. I'll warn our listeners, that one's already sold out. But yeah. I know you all have information about stand-up history events on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I've got a link to that on our website, wvxu.org, so you can stay tuned there for the next one. Now, I know because I read your blog, Greg, so I'm not going to pretend I knew this without you, but the region's been bombarded by meteors. Do you get into that, Dean? Do you talk about how we've just been bombarded in the 1890s, early 1900s, or do you leave the meteors to Greg?
Yeah, there's a, one of the things that we always got when I was at the observatory, people would come around with their rocks, like monthly. They'd be like, hey, Dean, I saw this thing in the sky. It fell in my neighbor's yard. Here's the rock. Or this is the rock that my grandma said that she got from her grandfather on the farm in Kentucky. If you have a family story like that, if you have a rock in your house that came from your great grandpa from a Kentucky farm, you are not alone. Not one of them turned out to be a meteorite. All of them were meteor wrongs, meaning they were earth rocks. So those tall tales of meteors falling on Cincinnati are some you can just say, yeah, boy, they. But there have been lots of observed meteor, shooting stars and fireballs up in the sky. And so it does add to the nice Cincinnati history, to the legends. But I would love to say that somebody actually brought me a real rock from outer space.
Ooh.
It has never, ever happened in all these years.
That sounds like a challenge. It sounds like a challenge for everybody out there.
Please don't bring me any more rocks. Please, no more
That's
rocks.
That's funny. People would bring you rocks at the observatory. People would bring me their moonshine to my bar.
So maybe test it out.
Yeah. So maybe I got the better end of the stick.
Probably,
I don't know.
Probably. Wait, this is the one that gets you blind? Is that
I'd be like, tell me exactly how you made this because,
that's the tricky thing. Dean wasn't supposed to put those rocks in his mouth.
Yeah, no. There was not a lot of times I was trying that. Yeah. I was like, ooh, thank you.
Yeah. Put that aside for a special time.
Yeah. I'll clean with that later.
Yeah. But Greg, there have been historical accounts in newspapers about meteor showers and things, right?
Oh, yeah. The usually I come up with blog topics by looking for something completely different. And I was just telling these folks, I've been tracking down this young lady from Cincinnati, seduced and abandoned and taken to New York as a kept woman, and reading her fortune in the cards and the three of clubs she interpreted to mean that she should kill herself.
Oh,
and
no. How
she
awful.
Shot herself and survived.
Oh.
But in the course of looking for that, I found a whole thing about strange creatures in the Ohio River.
Like our own Loch Ness Monster kind of thing?
Mud mermaids.
Oh.
Down by Vivi, Indiana. And so I was looking for something totally different and discovered a report about an actual large meteorite that was found in northern Kentucky only exist now as slices. It was sent to a shop in New York City that sold natural history items. And in fact, they were the ones who stuffed and mounted the carcass of an elephant that was killed by a firing squad at the Cincinnati Zoo.
Oh my gosh.
I remember that story. Oh my gosh, it's horrible.
And so all of this stuff kind of ties together in a way that surprises people about Cincinnati history. They have this idea, Grater's ice cream and the Cincinnati Reds and our nice German Gemütlichkeit and that sort of thing. And
he just showed we off
had
with that one.
One strange city. This is such a strange city.
Well, but wait, tell us more about the mud mermaids. I mean, you can't just drop mud mermaids and not explain what the heck that is.
Well, in addition to the Museum Center, tomorrow night, we have a monthly residency at a Cafe in Westwood. And tonight, one of our new presenters is the brother of our MC, Mike Perino, his brother, Tim Perino, who ran the Showboat Majestic. We'll be doing Tales from the Showboat Majestic tonight. And so I thought I'd follow up with weird things they found in the Ohio River. And in the 1860s, somebody reported seeing these 3-foot-long yellowish creatures with pointed ears and long claws living on the banks of the Ohio River near Vivi and catching catfish and devouring them within eyesight of the people passing up and down the river on the riverboats. And they've never been seen since or fully documented, but we do have some newspaper articles about the mud mermaids.
Could this be linked to the moonshine that you mentioned earlier?
I know now.
So Dean was explaining how he became part of this group. It sounds like you want to be part of it rather than try to moderate it, which seems like the right call.
Oh, it's impossible to moderate them. So yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah. Well, Greg, you all got together to tell these stories at events. What got you all started? I mean, you and Molly are two of the co-founders.
Yeah,
maybe I'll let Molly talk about this.
Yeah, the third co-founder is a guy named Kent Malloy.
Yes. And
Kent's a very talented guy. He, at the time that we started this thing, he was directing a kind of post-apocalyptic television show.
Yeah.
but he had this idea for a PBS special to get into the weird history of cities in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so we were going to do a pilot with Cincinnati. And Molly and I had just been chatting about taking our show on the road.
Yeah.
And we set this up in the basement of Myrtle's.
Yeah, Myrtle's Funchhouse. we were drinking. Yeah. But no, whenever I would get, like, I'd run into Greg or Greg would come in, we would just start going back and forth of all these stories, Cincinnati stories that we knew. And I think Craig was sitting there and he's like, we gotta do something with this. You guys are insane. You know, like this is incredible. But yeah, like, there are, like Greg said, there's so many cool stories that are just out of this world. And what makes our city so special. So, like, it was the idea just to be able to tell those stories and keep those stories alive. So the stand-up history kind of came about that way.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, having a comedian, which so these are – we put a lot of fun into these stories too, you know, because, I mean, they can't not be. They're right. Really weird. We decided to put it, you know, we each get up, we have a slideshow. It's like 15, 20 minutes of this, of a story. And there's maybe four or five of us, three to five of us, it depends, that tell these stories.
Yeah.
And then we were doing it around in different bars, my bars when I had them mostly, but then now Muse Cafe is once a month. And then
Fogarty's.
Fogarty's was fun during the Harvest Home festival. We'll anybody who wants us to come,
just
call us.
Yeah,
or call Dean.
Yeah, I'm the Dean's, booking agent.
Dean's
yeah.
really good at this.
Send him a message on a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I know.
No rocks. Yeah. Well, the one thing that I got from listening to you guys so much was this kind of appreciation of Cincinnati, like, real. Like, you know, you hear history of Cincinnati, you're like, oh, maybe this, like, idyllic, like, oh, people back then, they were so, like, no, they were just like us. Yeah. They had the same vices, the same weaknesses, the same strengths, and that's what I always like to hear. So, of course, I like to hear the vice part, so thank you guys for that.
There was quite a bit of vice in Cincinnati back in the day. It's crazy.
So. Yeah, the we all have our little specialties, you know. Molly's usually involves alcohol. I have my ladies, and we have Dan Wellert who does food, and Anne Senefeld who does the history of buildings, and everybody's got kind of a thing, and so you kind of get nervous if you drift into somebody's territory. But the earliest record I found of cocktails in Cincinnati was 1850, And it was an article that said, this is a great thing to get your appetite going before breakfast.
It's oh, my true. Goodness.
And I thought, even though I'm in Molly's territory, this story is too good to pay us off.
No, but it doesn't ever matter. Like, it's all our history. So it's really, really cool. And I get to discover things that I didn't know. And I go down rabbit holes. If Greg writes about something, I'll be like, oh, and then I completely go off on this tangent of something that he picked up that now I'm interested in over here. Yeah. And the same thing, like I found that book about Dirty Helen.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
She was a character.
Yeah, I feel like we don't have time to get into Dirty Helen with the time we have left. Dean, do you think all this history gives us a greater appreciation of Cincinnati? Do you think knowing the weird and woolly side of our history kind of...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been in Cincinnati 30 some years, which I don't know if that still makes me a native yet. That's the only problem. I didn't go to high school here, so I do apologize for that part. So as an outsider, it makes you appreciate Cincinnati a lot because this was one of the places to be. I mean, we were the Queen City of the West. This wasn't just like, a small town. We were one of the biggest towns in the whole country. Mm-hmm. And so many people, so many interesting characters came through, so many interesting ideas came through that it really, it makes me want to get out there and see all these places that these guys talk about and walk in the same places that other people did. And they're all right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Greg, in 20 seconds, we live in very divisive times. There have been divisive times in the past. As a historian of sorts, what do you think what do you think future generations will look back on and talk about?
It amuses the heck out of me when people say, you know, we should go back to those days when politics was polite.
Never was.
Bullpucky. One of the reasons I love digging into some of this old stuff is they were vicious beyond belief, and the mud throwing and people beating each other up in the street over editorials. What a great town.
20 seconds, and he kept that funny, too. Yeah. That was good. I was like, God.
I've been talking with Stand-Up History co-founder and Cincinnati Curiosities blogger Greg Hand, Stand-Up History co-founder and mixologist Molly Wellman, and astronomer and host of the Looking Up podcast, Dean Regas. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You can find more information about stand-up history events on Facebook. There's a link on our website. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU.